Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
So they move into adolescence where they know they're more or less on their own to figure out their identity, and yet they do not have the ability to think abstractly. It's like they have this first-person view of life, and what's right in front of them is what's true. The number one issue for an early adolescent is safety and somebody liking them. That's all they want. Do you like me? I know and feel this is tough. I'm still a goofball. I can't reflect on it. If you push me to talk much about the abstractness in my life, I'm going to flounder.
What used to be a season of life that passed through in a couple of years for kids now is more of a developmental stage that has three different components. We call it adolescence, but adolescence now is broken down into early adolescence, mid-adolescence, and late adolescence. Where do your kids fit in this grid, and how can you help to effectively parent them? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today here on the Homeward broadcast from the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University. Welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Part two of Jim's interview with Chap Clark on reconnecting with kids in an online culture is straight ahead. Thanks for remembering that Homeward is completely listener-supported, and you can give a gift online at homeward.com. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today is a great day. We're going to have a continuing conversation with Chap Clark. We're talking about reconnecting with kids in an online culture. Now, Chap is one of my favorite people, and he understands culture, and he understands adolescence like few in the world. He's the Associate Professor of Youth, Family, and Culture, and the Director of Youth Ministry Programs at Fuller Theological Seminary. I send people to him all the time. He is also the Vice Dean of Regional Campuses for Fuller Theological Seminary, a great school there in Southern California. Author of several books, Chap and his wife, Dee, who also wrote with him this particular book we're talking about, Disconnected, Parenting Teens in a MySpace World, live in Los Angeles area. They have three kids, and it's great to have you back with us.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
Now, we've been talking even before the broadcast about reconnecting with our kids, and quite frankly, I think a lot of parents find themselves sort of caught off guard. I was a youth worker just like you were, and when our kids became 12 and 13, I went into shock because I thought I was going to be cool and I thought it was going to be easy. I found it, frankly, you know, very difficult, and I was caught off guard that adolescence was going to be so hard for our kids, but also so hard for me. Is that a natural thing that happens?
Normal occurrence. Kids have to change roles. They got to move out of, as I mentioned before, they have to shift out of the role of child, that everything's relatively stable. They just want to be known and held and cared for in the midst of the family, but then they know they have to go into a new role, this role of adolescent, which by its nature is independent and is individual, and it's not relying so heavily on your family for the old things, but they rely on us for different things. They want to have a sense that we trust them. They want to have a sense that we believe in them, even when they're not worthy of that trust and belief.
Well, let me bring that up, because you have something that you call five tasks of parenting.
Right.
And one of them was boundarying. I love that phrase. And yet the fact is that a lot of times our kids want to trust me, mom and dad. Why don't you trust me? Well, because you're not being trustworthy.
Right.
So then how do we still trust them in the midst of them going through an experimental phase, in the midst of them rebelling against our morals and values or whatever?
Well, one thing we have to do is be really careful of the language we use and not say things like you're not trustworthy, because their journey is to try to build a sense of power and a sense of self, so that they really believe that they have something to offer. The stronger a person you are, the more capable you're going to be to make good choices and to be kinder and gentler to other folks. The weaker you are internally, the more obnoxious and arrogant you're going to be. So what we have to do is build into our kids the belief that they really are solid, great people. Now, so therefore, any messages we give them that undercut that, even if we are trying to get them into following our values and our rules and our way of thinking, by saying things that discount their ability to do that, causes them to be insecure.
Well,
and not
I get that, and at the same time, I mean, there's discipline. There are, you know, there are consequences to decisions. So how do you do that? How do you build their self-image and build their trust? And at the same time, you're going, hey, you know what? If you miss curfew, then there's a consequence.
Well, even that is a top-down hierarchical statement that, from our perspective, makes perfect sense, but from their perspective, says you're an idiot. And when you say you're an idiot, then inside they don't build this personal power. So that's why we use the word boundary instead of discipline or consequences.
Well, give us an example of that.
Well, boundaries are the line around which that they can't cross, or there are going to be, as adults, we call them consequences. What that means is a couple of things. One is we really believe that we need to give our kids the power to negotiate those boundaries. And then, as they say, when they're a fourth grader, maybe it's bedtime. When they're 14, it's on the phone or computer. When they're 16, 17, it's when you're home at night. But then you have conversations with them around where those boundaries are, and then you have a check-in balance 2 or 3 weeks later, and then you always are couching it within respectful conversation instead of just parents saying, here are the rules, until you're 18, you follow my way. In other words, we include them in the process. Then when they violate it, you force them to have the conversation to pull those boundaries in, and they share in that. And that's the consequences, pulling boundaries in. And every kid needs to have different consequences because every kid learns what it means to be healthy within those boundaries differently.
Well, it's interesting when you say that because, you know, we get emails every day.
Sure.
About kids who are, sleeping. I got one today. There was a young daughter who's 20 and she's sleeping with a 31-year-old. And the dad goes, I have no idea what to do. She's 20 years old and yet she's still under my dime. So she can't really have a conversation that's going to be kind of warm and gentle. He's in crisis mode. What do you say to somebody who's maybe parenting one of those older or what you call emerging adults or still late adolescents?
Well, Jeffrey Jarinet calls them emerging adults. I still call them late adolescents, but that's a longer conversation. Yeah. Well, it depends on what went into that kid's life going up to the 20-year-old. What kind of – wherever you are right now with your child, at that point is when you got to make sure you – properly and carefully and respectfully negotiate what is appropriate decisions, and not to resource your kid's rebellion, but to negotiate that. And if you have a line that says if you're going to be involved in a sexual relationship, then that is such a violation of what we're calling you to be about, then we're going to have to renegotiate money and where you live and how we support you in school or work. But do it respectfully without losing your cool. That's a really important key.
Yeah, actually, I did that. So, you know,
I
passed Chap Clark's deal today. You talk a lot about in your book, Disconnected, you talk about abandonment. And so many kids today feel abandoned, and actually many kids are abandoned. Now, yet what's fascinating is, and I underline this in yours and Dee's book, because you said giving everything to your child can also be a form of abandonment. Because we've got these people who are gone. You know, dad's gone and he's not anywhere around. Same time, you also have families that are just, they're paying for everything, they're doing everything, they're doing their homework, they're doing the science project and on, and you're calling that a form of abandonment.
It is, because it's abandoning our responsibility as parents to help our kid develop a sense of self. That's their identity in Christ, in creation, redemption, and calling. Abandoning our ability and calling to help them to create personal power so that they can feel strong and have a sense of self, and abandoning them their sense that they actually fit because God's given them gifts to fit. And so when we overindulge, when we overcompensate, when we write their college entrance exams and all those things, we undercut their ability to grow.
Yeah, you know, I think that's interesting. And I think there are times when we did this. I've told this on the air before, but when Christy was in about fourth grade, everybody else, I could tell the parents were doing the science projects. And, you know, Christy's was like the worst. And you know, Christy would kind of look at hers. But I was proud of her because she did it, but it wasn't all that good. One day, in the midst of homework mess, Kathy goes, you're going to have to help here, bucko. And I'm terrible at this stuff anyway. Science was not my deal. So I created the science project, and it was kind of this volcano thing. And I called a friend of mine and said, hey, how do you do it? And he told me. And so we bring it to the deal. I was pretty proud of my job. And Christy did it. Well, then we get there that night, and my thing had totally fallen apart. And so all these other ones were good. And I love what the teacher said. She said, you know, Jim, what I really appreciate about it is that you allow Christy to do her own work. Now there was a moral dilemma in my life. Like, you know, what do I do here?
It's not her fault. It's bad.
Right.
I did it.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting because what you're talking about here is something we talk a lot about on homework, is that we have to help our kids become responsible adults. We have to launch them into adulthood. And we can't do that by doing everything for them. It's the same form as abandoning them.
Right. Exactly right. And every kid in every situation is a balance. My daughter's a senior at Seattle Pacific, and she texted me this last week, the difference between Anglicans and Episcopalians. Well, I could have said, go look it up, but I'm a professor at a seminary. So I am walking with her to try to discover that together, and that's really a different thing. That's what our kids need.
Yeah, and that's what we need in every age level, and we've got to figure that out. What I want to do when we come back is I actually want to take these different levels of adolescence that you have and help us kind of understand what are the major issues of early adolescence, mid-adolescence, right, and then late adolescence. We'll be right back. Chap Clark with us. We're talking about reconnecting with kids in an online culture. Great book, by the way, Disconnected. It was a book I read last week. And actually, I'd read the book before as well, so I like this book a lot. I'm handing it to people. Roger?
Well, there's always great research in books written by Chap Clark, and Disconnected is another one, along with Hurt and the new one he's got coming out called Sticky Faith. These are all things that we as parents can benefit from because it looks at adolescents here in the 21st century and gives us real-world applications as to what we can do as parents to better connect with our kids. And today on Homeward, we're talking about reconnecting with kids in an online culture. This is part two of our continuing conversation. We stream audio at Homeward. It's archived there too. We also podcast through iTunes, and if you'd like to never miss a program here on Homeward, our daily half-hour programs are available via podcast. Go to homeward.com, hit the podcast button. It'll redirect you to our place on iTunes, and you can start that free subscription today. There's more to come.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot.
Doctor, we just feel like our daughter's slipping away, you know, and it's all my fault. Too many long nights at the office and away from home.
No, don't blame yourself, Bill. I should have done more for her.
Now, hold on a minute.
Well, maybe I was too strict with her.
Maybe I wasn't strict enough.
Oh, we shouldn't have moved in the middle of her sophomore year.
We should have changed churches. Then she could have made better friends.
Okay, well, if you think you've failed as a parent, well, you're not alone. All of us fail at one time or another. However, just because we think we've blown it with our kids doesn't mean that God will ever fail them. No matter how many mistakes we make as parents, there's always hope in the Lord. That's the subject of a brand new tip sheet I've written called Loving Your Kids Even When You Think You've Failed as a Parent. You can download a free copy from our website at homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns, Chap Clark with us, reconnecting with kids in an online culture. By the way, a great book, Disconnected, Parenting Teens in a MySpace World. Chap and D. Clark, and by the way, a great combo and a great book. Chap, something that I really learned a lot from you is this whole idea of the stages of adolescence, because just like there are stages from childhood toward adulthood, there's also even now what you're saying is stages of adolescence, and we've talked a little bit about it. You know, there's the early, there's the mid, and then there's the late adolescence. But I want to unpack that for a minute. I want to throw out early adolescence. What are early adolescents going through, and what can we do as parents to help them through that stage to get them to the next stage?
Well, early adolescence is marked, that's the entrance into it is marked by the average age of puberty of the girls in that community.
Which has gone down in recent
years. It's gone down for a lot of reasons, and it's roughly around 11, 12 years old, and that goes till about 14, 15, and it's brain development, it is the ability to think abstractly. They haven't quite hit that yet, so they move into adolescence where they know they're more or less on their own to figure out their identity, and yet they do not have the ability to think abstractly. It's like they have this first-person view of life, and what's right in front of them is what's true. The number one issue for an early adolescent is safety and somebody liking them. That's all they want. Do you like me? I know and feel this is tough. I'm still a goofball. I can't reflect on it. If you push me to talk much about the abstractness in my life, I'm going to flounder. And so how do you help them? Mostly modeling Christ. Secondly, is having experiences where in the moment when the Lord, or anything that you want to talk about, whatever's in the moment, that's what you deal with right there. Don't try to ask your kid, 2 weeks ago when you did this, what were you thinking? Because they just can't respond.
And so really, when you're bringing up sex education, drug education, school, homework, all these kind of things, you got to be thinking, wait, in this early adolescence, they're still almost children in some ways. They're moving toward, launching them into adulthood, but it's kind of, they're still thinking in that way. Now let's go to mid-adolescence. It's a new phrase for a lot of people. And what's interesting, I was thinking about this, Roger, that here we are talking about this, of no interest to most of us when we were making babies or when we had little babies. babies, and all of a sudden now we're going, oh my goodness, we got to hear this because it's so critical to where our kids are today. But let's take mid-adolescence. You used a phrase in your book called egocentric abstraction, and that must have to do something with mid-adolescence, but what is it, and then what can we do?
Okay. Egocentric abstraction defines the period between roughly 14 or 15 and maybe 19 to 20, where you are abstractly aware, you move more to a third-person view of the world, that you impact others, they impact you, and you can think about cause and effect, connect dots. But because adolescence is lengthened so much, and by that time you become aware of the multiple agendas around you, it's very difficult for you to care about your impact on others. So therefore, you're more concerned, and the defining characteristic of your kid between 14 and 20 is you are most concerned with your own self-protection, somehow making it through this period and surviving this deal, which is why the first book was called Hurt. That's what we discovered through this research project we did, and Disconnected is based on that, is that mid-adolescents, especially when they can start talking about it, about 17 and 18, are aware that they've really been wounded by the multiple agendas around them and the lack of support to help them through it. So what do we do about it? We, A, first, understand that this is a new stage of life. None of us as parents ever went through this. We don't get it. So when you tell your kid, I understand you, I went to high school, they're looking at you like you have no idea how clueless you are. And secondly, is we say, I really understand that high school is the best time of your life. And a kid goes, oh, great, perfect. In fact, yesterday in a focus group at a famous Christian high school that I'm working with right now, that we both have actually worked with, a kid in a focus group, when I said, if Jesus walked on your campus right now, what do you think he'd say? And the kid goes, and I thought the cross was hard.
That's a great comment for us to understand as parents.
It's an incredible quote, because that's all the kids go, absolutely right. Wow. So that's a key point.
Boy, that does say so much. And, you know, it's interesting in my own experience, you know, having all girls, but right at that stage, middle adolescence, a lot of them were making very unwise decisions about their relationships and sexuality. There were mean girls, but there was also a lot of these girls were losing their virginity quite young. And these were neat kids. These were kids who were in the church, but their emotional involvement exceeded their maturity level, and they were just getting blasted at this particular stage in life.
Well, here's what's happened with sexuality, is that it is true that it's roughly down, according to the reports, same kind of studies, about 8% from 20 years ago. Some people say it's because of abstinence education. Sure doesn't look that way. Really what's going on is boyfriend-girlfriends are down about 50% at least from 20 years ago. Kids, as mid-adolescents, are more concerned with their own safety, so they grab onto friends, these things called clusters, not cliques, that are very tight friendship groups. And therefore, there's not anywhere near as much sexual intercourse, but there's all kind of sexual activity.
Right.
One quarter of 14 to 19-year-old kids today have a reported sexual transmitted disease. Probably one-third have a sexually transmitted disease. One-third. They're all kind of behaviors. And what they're doing, it's out of this sense of isolation, loneliness, trying to make it through. The answer is to have adults that surround them and to have frank conversations with our kids, be understanding, and then be compassionate. Compassion comes from two Latin words, cum pati, which means to suffer with another. Not just I love my kids, but do I really come alongside of them and recognize that this is hard for them and start there, then move to the issues of values and morality and consequences.
Yeah, that's really good. Very, very helpful. Very practical as well, and not always easy to do when you're in the
right
heat of the moment.
Right.
Now, the other stage of adolescence is what you call late adolescence. Some call emerging adulthood. And I think this threw me, too. I mean, here I am. I studied this. I'm loving this conversation is because this is me, and all of a sudden my kids get to be in their 20s. I mean, Kathy and I were married at the age of some of our kids now who I'm still calling late adolescents.
Right.
But, you know, it's a tough stage for them.
Well, what's happened is adolescence is lengthened. It's much more difficult to become an adult today than it was 20 years ago. For example, the needs and the perspectives and the experiences to be an adult are just exponentially different. And there's been studies that have shown, yet the adult support to help a kid become an adult is exponentially less. So therefore, it's become much more tough to enter. And there's more woundedness because of how our culture's fragmented and isolated. Therefore, people carry some of these elements of not really landing until sometimes late 20s or later, like the film we mentioned, Failure to Launch. There is a scholar named Jeffrey Arnett who is pushing that we don't call it late adolescence, we call it emerging adulthood because it's different than what happens in high school. And he's right, on the one hand, maybe we ought to call it emerging adulthood, but that's a really nice way to say the reality is they just haven't landed as adults yet. So whatever we call it. So here's what you do as your 23-year-old. Don't expect your 23-year-old to be you when you were 23. In fact, today's 23-year-old is the developmental equivalent of a 17-year-old 20 years ago.
Well, that's very important for us to hear that.
And just treat them accordingly and love them and help guide them. But don't think they ought to be done when they're 19 years old.
What's hard is, you know, they're 23. That, you know, with our kids, all of them said, you know, now that I'm 18, I'm free to make any decision. And by the way, can you pay for some of those decisions?
Right, yeah.
And keep paying for school and stuff. And yet at the same time, they're, you know, it's an interesting way to do it because they're 23, but they're still in the stage of an adolescent. And
right.
it's a complicated thing for parents.
It's
as well.
Very complicated. And that's why if we build in a system of conversation, boundaries, and making sure we have clarity and not get overly emotional and not have our own junk in the midst of it,
right.
We're going to have a much better shot of helping them.
It's interesting because we're having this conversation. It's actually quite deep, and yet my parents didn't have this kind of conversation because, frankly, they sort of didn't need
right.
to.
Right, they didn't need it.
With
right.
the Burns boys, you know, there was four of us. I want to go with one last one.
Okay.
I'm fine, okay?
It's where kids, once we're pushing at them or we even ask a nice question, you may be listening to this radio broadcast and you're going, okay, I'm going to fix this. You pick up your eighth grader from school and immediately you launch into, honey, how was your day? And they go, oh, it was fine. Please stop it. What happened? Did you listen to that radio program of that Jim Burns guy again? And what they're really just saying is, I want to be safe before you make me be vulnerable. And I need to know for sure that you don't have another agenda because I can't handle another agenda. So when they push back and go, I'm fine, I'm okay, leave me alone, what they're really saying is I'm not feeling very safe right now, and you're adding to it.
Yeah. You know, that's a great statement. I want to be safe. I don't want to be vulnerable right now. You know, a lot of parents, instead of pushing right then and what I call flooding, push, 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 tap, tap, tap
yeah.
on them, that what they really have to say is, okay, that's good. And then later in a conversation.
Right.
For me, it was always Kathy'd look at me and I'd go, oh, we're going to go get some yogurt. And what that meant was Golden Spoon yogurt. Some of the best conversations with my girls was over yogurt. And I really did kind of have an agenda, but they had already said, you know, everything's fine. I knew everything wasn't fine. And I could find over food or over, you know, something, a walk or whatever it was.
Peabody yogurt for us in La Cunada. Same
yeah.
exact thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great, great. Chap, thank you so much for being with us. Great stuff today.
Great to be with you, as always, Jim. Thanks for our friendship and for the work you're doing.
And that concludes part two of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with Dr. Chap Clark here on the Homeward Broadcast. We've been talking about reconnecting with kids in an online culture. There are lots of resources available for you at homeward.com that can help you reconnect with your kids in an online culture, kind of get away from Facebook and texting your kids and actually having meaningful conversation with them and building relationship with them. Go to homeward.com and you can sign up for our free Good Advice Parent newsletter. It comes your way each and every month and has articles and links to get you into the tip sheets that can help you get that good relationship going. Also, remember Dr. Jim Burns' book, Teenology, is a great way to help understand all three stages of adolescence, the early, mid, and late adolescence. So whether your children are 10 or 25, you can still benefit from Dr. Jim Burns' book, Teenology. And by the way, you can order Teenology or any of the books written by Dr. Jim Burns. You can order them directly from our online resource center today at homeward.com. Now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer, Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.